Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mental Health Connection. I am your host, Tristan Simmons. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 6 of the Mental Health Connection. Today, I had the pleasure of sitting down with one of my good mates, Jared Carey. Jared is a centre manager who looks after about 50 staff members, and he's heavily involved in the football circles and has been for a number of years from the AFL level right down to coaching local footy, and has coached a lot of junior representative sides throughout the journey. In his family life, Jared is a father of two and a husband, two beautiful boys. Today, we had a very open and honest conversation about Jared's mental health condition and also mine. We talk about a whole range of things, including how we incorporate that into our leadership qualities as well, and into being a father. We do touch on suicide, and we do touch on medication. So if there is a trigger in there for you, please tune out, turn it off, turn the volume down, whatever you prefer. We do talk about medication, so if that is something that you are thinking about going down that path, or if you are on medication and are thinking about hopping off it, I urge you to make sure you do that with the support of a qualified physician or your general practitioner. But thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode. So welcome to the Mental Health Connection, Jared.
Thank you, Simo.
Thanks for having me around your house as well.
Put out the red carpet for you tonight.
Yep, I know. You did have The Bachelor on, but yeah, switch that one off.
You've taken me away from The Bachelor finale, no less. I'm not happy, mate.
You can always record it.
Yeah, no, I don't do that, mate.
Nah.
I'll catch up.
Definitely appreciate it. And I thought before we really get into it, sort of a bit of a tribute to the old Spud Frawley.
Yep.
I know, obviously, we've been sharing some texts and stuff that's come out, some of the speeches, and you know, obviously the memorial and things like that. So just a bit of a shout out to the family. And I didn't know Spud. I didn't know him personally.
Yep.
Connected with him a few times on social media, on Instagram, well, especially all the stuff he shared about mental health.
Yep.
So I felt when everything went down, and obviously it all came to light, what's been going on with him. I actually felt it.
Yeah.
In terms of just because I could have been there, I was there at one stage.
Yep.
As well. So you just feel like, you know.
Well, I think both you and I have been through exactly what Spud has reportedly gone through, where he went off his medications because he felt like he was rehabilitated, or over his illness.
Yes.
And then, like he reportedly has, I went downhill. You've done the same. So, you know, it can be a vicious yo-yo sometimes. And, you know, you and I are here to keep telling the story, and unfortunately Spud isn't.
Yes. So, definitely our thoughts go out to the family, and,
yep.
I'll keep driving this message. I know you drive it as well. You know, getting the word out there, and, for us, I suppose if you look back probably five, six, 7 years ago, would there be two blokes sitting in a house talking, being open and honest about mental health?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And it wouldn't even have been thought about back then. So that's where the great work that you know, Danny Frawley has done, and Wayne Schwoss, who you and I spoke about, how beautiful his speech was at Spud's funeral. You know, that's where all their hard work has really paved the way for great little podcasts like yours, mate, which will take over the world one day.
Yeah, we'll see. But anyone listening out there, feel free to give me a review. It'd be great.
Yep, five stars.
Five stars. But so getting on track in terms of how I know you, so I've known you for the listeners out there, about five years now.
Yep.
Came across your desk as a player.
Yes.
And you were the coach.
Yes.
For footy, got dragged up country to play some footy.
Yep. Very successful year we had up there.
It was.
Managed to nab the one win.
That's all right, which I didn't play in because I was sick that day. But yeah. So maybe that was the reason why they won.
Yeah.
Well. But I have been fairly open and about it, saying that it was one of the best years that I've had footy.
Yep.
It wasn't about win losses. It was just about me actually enjoying footy.
Yeah.
Taking a bit of pressure away. That was the year, and I don't think you knew it till last year, I think, when I did a talk.
Correct.
That probably a few weeks beforehand, that's actually when I had my first breakdown.
Mm.
So for me, it was like part of that rehab process
yep.
as well. But no one knew about it, and I just went in and enjoyed footy,
yep.
Which, like I said, and that's probably why it's one of my most enjoyable years at footy.
Yeah.
As well, because I just focused a bit on myself, having some fun, took pressure away from, you know, like really high level footy that I played when I was sort of younger.
Yep.
And just really wanted to help, obviously, the kids that were developing.
Yeah, and you were great in that role too. Like, obviously, it was a challenging environment from the point of view that, you know, in footy speak, for those footy people listening, you know, we were really battling against it most weeks. We had a player budget of something around 50,000, and we were playing against teams who were spending nearly 300,000. So, you know, it was a really difficult year from that point of view. But I suppose when you are faced with that, you just try and find the fun, and I think we did that pretty well, despite only winning one game.
Yep.
And you know, with some really high quality people such as yourself and Harrow and other guys like that, and Tassie and Webby, and you know, we were able to create a pretty good environment.
Yeah.
Where we just enjoyed it despite the fact that we were getting smashed every week. So
exactly, yeah. And I, like, even you had blokes that were still showing up to training,
yep.
and you know, when they could, obviously there's always players that have stuff that come up, but
yeah.
you know, generally there was pretty good numbers, and
yep.
there was just good atmosphere around the club
yeah.
as well, which was good. Yep. So that's sort of where we connected.
It was 2014.
Disconnected for a little while in terms of you went one way, I went the other.
Yep, didn't have to see your face too often, which was good.
Yeah, but there's always positives.
Mm-hmm.
And then we reconnected last year in 2018.
Yeah, another great year of footy.
Where I stepped out of the playing ranks and stepped into the coaching ranks
yep.
under you.
Yep.
Under your tutelage. So, yeah, we've developed, even over the years after when you were coaching me as a player, we've always sort of been in close contact.
Yeah.
Especially
yeah.
through social media.
Yep.
Because you've gone through your own experiences with mental health.
Yep. Yeah.
As well. So you want to sort of share.
Yeah. So it's been a 13-year journey for me.
Yep.
So in 2006, I was working at Collingwood Footy Club and basically had a really nasty anxiety attack that I didn't realise was an anxiety attack.
Was that at the club?
So that was in a pre-season game. So I used to sit in the coach's box about an hour before the game. My heart started racing. I had no idea why.
Yep.
I had the sweats up in the coach's box, this was. So sort of tried to find my own little space for a little bit, and that didn't work to calm down. So I went downstairs and spoke to the doc because I thought I was having a heart attack.
Yep.
I was checked out by the medicos from, it was at Etihad Stadium, given the all clear. So I resumed duties in the coach's box.
Yep.
And pretty much that whole season, I was battling pretty badly anxiety. So,
yep.
Did a lot of traveling. I was doing, as well as in our coach's box at Collingwood, I was doing a lot of opposition analysis. So I was traveling interstate almost every second week, if not more than that.
Yep.
So that sort of fatigued me a lot as well. I wasn't sleeping well.
Yep.
Didn't understand what was happening. Didn't acknowledge that it was anxiety at the time. Just thought that there's something wrong with me.
Yep.
Just sort of spoke to the sports psych at Collingwood at the time, and that sort of helped, but it didn't really fix it, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Once the season finished, had time to take a deep breath and visited the doctor, my local doctor, got on some medication, and within a few weeks, I was starting to feel myself again.
Yep.
So I've been on and off meds, mostly on them ever since. And,
yep.
It's not something I'm ashamed of. It's something that I do to manage it.
That's part of it. It's part of your mental health journey.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I still have my moments. I've had a really good year in terms of my mental health. My anxiety has been well and truly under control. Still have moments every now and then. I spoke to you last week about having some anxiety. So yep. Had a few drinks last Saturday with my wife Zara, and sure enough, the next Sunday I had a little bit of anxiety because of it. So just with the body being tired and having some toxic fluid in there. So, it's certainly been something that I've had to really concentrate on and happy to share my story with anyone who wants to hear it and hopefully, might be able to help a little bit.
Did you know it was, like you said, you battled all year. Did you know it was anxiety?
Not really. No. So a lot of my anxiety is health related. So it's almost like I'm a hypochondriac.
Yep.
At stages. So if I was feeling a bit off, then I'd start thinking, oh, something might be wrong.
Yep.
Then my heart might start racing, and then, oh no, I'm going to have a heart attack.
Yeah.
And, so it was a real vicious cycle. I had a lot of tests in that year, 2006. Obviously, being at Collingwood, we had great access to physicians and professionals. So I had a lot of different tests. It wasn't, as I said, when I went on the meds, that was probably when I acknowledged and accepted that, right, oh, I've got, I suffer from anxiety.
Yep.
And that was probably, as much as going on the meds, probably accepting and acknowledging that I have anxiety was part of the process for moving forward.
Yep.
Yeah.
Did you find it hard to accept?
I don't know. Like, honestly, it was because it was 13 years ago. I was 26, or better turn 26. I'm not sure if it was me just refusing to accept it. I don't think it was.
Yep.
I think it was just me thinking worst case scenario.
Yeah.
But now I acknowledge really quickly, right, I've got a bit of anxiety here.
Yeah.
You learn you don't fight it, as you know, you don't fight against it. You just let it roll in and let it roll out.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
We all have our own little coping mechanisms and strategies, and
100%.
I make sure that I try and avoid things that'll flare it up, and make sure I do things that'll keep me balanced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. When I asked that question, just because I think I didn't accept it at first.
Yep.
Personally.
Yep.
Even though sort of I was, I think my wife said, I think, sounds like you've got anxiety, and now I trace it back, and I probably had bits of it when I was, a teenager.
And, yeah, correct.
And I think
I was the same. Spot on.
Stress about things and becoming a father, I think that was sort of, the... I don't even know what I'm trying to quote there.
It triggered it
triggered and really set it off because there was a responsibility of someone else.
Yep.
And I don't think I accepted it at first. And I think it's quite common. I think being males, we don't.
Yep.
It's that old male mentality.
Yep.
That's why, which I mentioned at the start of the show, just having two blokes talking about mental health openly and honestly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is what we need in society.
And people can't see us. We're holding hands and having a hug as well. So, we wouldn't be... Blokes wouldn't do that a couple of years ago either.
Exactly.
But it's funny you say about the, becoming a parent, because I was the same. Lenny came along in 2014 and as we spoke about before, going off meds, I thought, oh, I've just had my first son, my first child, I'm on top of the world, I'm feeling really good, I'll go off my meds. Lasted for a good 2 to 3 months, and then went downhill in a really big way. The anxiety was just debilitating at the time. And the worst part about it was having to go back on the meds, I found. So going back on the meds gave me insomnia.
Okay. Yep.
Which made my anxiety even worse.
Yeah, you're not getting that rest and recovery.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So, my GP was great. He gave me a really small prescription of sleeping meds, and that helped me sort of balance me out and get me back on track, so that the the anxiety meds could kick in and and start doing their job. But that was a it was a good 12-month battle from going off meds, feeling great, to downhill we go, and then another good 12 months before I was back to Jared.
Yeah. It's pretty I went off meds earlier in the year.
Yep.
And then sort of weaned down and was going really well. And I have mentioned it that in some of my social media, and obviously we've had chats about it, that obviously some personal stuff went on.
Yep.
And it just really, because I was still, if it didn't happen, I probably would have still been off.
Yep.
Obviously knocking on wood or, you know, looking at it, I probably would have still been off meds.
Yep.
Because I was going really well, but it just showed this obviously big trigger just sent me right back. So I did have to go back on them.
Yep. And you're still on them now?
Yep. Still on them now. I definitely recovered a lot quicker.
Yep.
Compared to 4 or 5 years ago, just because I developed a lot of the coping mechanisms and I had an amazing support network around me.
Yep.
You've always, like, even the last few years, obviously you've been part of that. I've got a lot of people have sort of, I tell people if you can have sort of five, you know, sort of people you can really call on straight away, because I've been very open and honest, I can call, I've got quite a lot as well.
Yeah,
which is good. And, you know, some people are there more than others, and it all depends on what stage of your life you're at.
Yeah, correct.
As well, when we're coaching together last year, every week, we're having conversations,
checking in
and stuff like that. And
yep.
Even now, because I'm open, I put it on Facebook, I put it on Instagram, # mental health connection.
Yep.
If people want to find me and follow me, you probably already are anyway. But you're one of the first that will send me a message.
Yeah.
You know, just checking in. Hey man, if you need anything, and vice versa. So
yeah, absolutely.
I think the message there is for males, females is checking in.
Yep.
If I came to the footy club last year and you could sense that I wasn't myself, talking a lot of shit, you know, trying to pretend to be a good coach.
Yep.
And you picked up that I wasn't, you would ask, you know, is everything all right?
Yeah.
You know, I'd let you know where I'm at. Yep. So, you know.
And the dynamics, I think, of male friendship is turning that way quite a lot, which is great, because in the past it's been very superficial, and you know, I think we all have our mates who it is still at that level, which is great, and you need friends like that. But the really important conversations you can have them much more comfortably now with your male friends, as opposed to what would have happened 5 years ago. And that's, you know, you and I like that. Even Hazy, who's one of our close mates, you know, he's a weird unit and a very much a bloke's bloke, but we know that we can lean on him as well. So
we'll tell Hazy to listen to this.
6 minutes and 15 seconds. And I think that's a lot of the way that leadership's going as well, Simo, that, you know, it's all about relationships now. So
you see that in the footy. Obviously, you're big into the footy, I'm big into the footy. Unfortunately, you're a Collingwood supporter.
Yep, Flagpies.
The Flagpies. And I notice that in terms of from the outside looking in. Obviously, I don't see what's on the inside, but, you know, the sort of that relationship that Buckley seems to have with his players, you know, he shows empathy, you know, but he leads them. And he coaches them and he develops them. But they know if they're going through something or that they can see, they can come to him or obviously anyone else within the club. It's opening up those channels, which sort of leads me to one of my questions that I did put down. So as a coach, because at the moment, obviously, you're still coaching. You're an assistant coach, a senior assistant coach.
Yep.
Obviously, have a lot of men. But you're also a manager.
Yep.
As well at a swim school.
Yep.
So you got various staff.
Yeah.
As a manager, as a coach, what do you do to create those open channels for your staff or your coaches to come see you? Or
excellent question, Simo.
It's a question without notice.
It is well done. Look, for me, I think the most important thing is showing them who you are, is being really authentic.
Yep.
And because people pick up pretty quickly if you're trying to be someone you're not.
Yep.
So, you know, this is who I am. This is me. I want to care about you. I want to get to know you. And then that tends to fast track those relationships pretty quickly.
Yep.
There's always going to be, in any workplace, in any footy club, in any section of society, there's going to be people who want those connections.
Yep.
But there's going to be 100%. People who just want to come and do their job and go.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's
yeah.
fine. That's absolutely fine. You don't try and... Those people who just want to come and do their job, you don't try and give them a hug and a high five and speak to them about their families and because they don't really want it.
Yeah.
You leave the opportunity there for them to do it. And I think the way that I carry myself, particularly at Kingswim, I think my team know that I'm there if they yep. want to have a chat but I reckon that's the most important thing, just being authentic, being yep. really authentic. And I've made it a real conscious effort this year. So my title's centre manager, but I don't really see myself as a manager. I think the term manager's probably a bit outdated, to be honest. So, I make sure our night program starts at 3:45, so our teachers start rolling in about 3:30. I make sure I'm out there in the staff room from around about 3:30 as much yep. as I can, and listening to them, talking to them, engaging with them, being involved in the banter,
yep.
Having a laugh with them, because leadership now, I reckon, is as much about being side by side with them, or more being side by side with them than actually standing in front of them and giving instructions. So,
I think you hit the nail on the head. That's just what good leaders do.
Yeah,
like I said, it is catering for everyone's individual needs, because, like I said, yep. some people come in, they do what they need to do, high fives, whatever.
Yep.
And then out they go. Some people want to sit down.
Absolutely.
They need that chat. They want more of a connection.
Yep.
But at least everyone knows, hey, my door's open.
Yep.
If you want to chat or
yeah, spot on
things like that.
Yep.
Which it is super important in the work environment. As well, there's quite a lot of managers, directors, coordinators, whatever their title is, that it's probably a skill that they're still working on, or maybe yep. it's a skill they don't have.
Yep.
So having that ability to show empathy,
yes,
but guide your team, lead your team,
yeah,
so they get the best out of themselves.
Yeah. And it is a new direction. So I mean, the days of command and control. They're yeah. not that far away. They're not that long ago. So there are obviously going to be a lot of leaders out there, a lot of managers out there who have always done it that way.
Yep.
But I'm a bit of a leadership junkie. I love learning about it, and I love attending workshops and forums and podcasts and YouTube videos and TED Talks. And it all says it's all about relationships now.
Yeah.
People, someone, I was at a workshop last week and the lady said, people won't remember what you taught them or what you told them, but they'll remember how you made them feel.
100%.
So, and I love that quote. I thought that's brilliant. Mm. So, I want to be a good person more than I want to be a good boss, if that makes sense. So, show them who you are. This is me.
I like it.
This is me.
It's part of this podcast. This is all about open honesty, raw, just being authentic,
yep.
just being yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
So does that come across, I know the answer, but does that come across as being a dad? As being a dad to two boys.
Yes, two boys.
As well.
Yes.
So as they grow up.
Yep.
Teaching them to be authentic and honest and being themselves.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to one of my team members today at work, and I mentioned how one of the key messages that I'm trying to get across to Lenny, who's nearly five now, is just the importance of being kind.
Yeah.
So important. And if I could only teach him one thing, I reckon that'd almost be it, because it just encompasses everything. If you're kind, then... You you're looking after people. You're being unselfish, and people warm to you. So it's really important for me that Lenny and Billy understand the importance of being kind, I'm always at Lenny about trying his best. I don't care how well he does, so long as he tries his best. So every day when I drop him off, or every time I drop him at kinder, it's always, righto, Lenny, what are you going to do today? He says, I'm going to do good listening and I'm going to try my best. So he knows. They're the two things that I always try and leave him with. So absolutely. I don't want the boys to be taking over the world and you know, running massive companies. I want them to be kind and happy. And if they're that, then yeah, I'm a happy dad.
I think if you're happy in life, you know, happy with what you do, comes back to work. And I've had people, because sometimes people's mental health can be related around work. They don't enjoy their work, and it really gets them down. And doing it for such a long period of time, that it just puts them sort of into a bit of a depressive state.
Yes.
But then changing their role, changing their position. I've had people that have actually said that obviously it was their job, wasn't people, it was just the work they were doing. Obviously it wasn't a good fit for them. They'd been doing it for so long, and all of a sudden they changed their career and they're just so much happier.
Yes.
Because they're doing something different.
Yep.
So I always tell people, in terms of work, doing something you're happy with, doing something you love, you work for over 100,000 hours in your life.
Yeah.
It doesn't come back to money. It doesn't come back to... Correct. It's just happiness, health.
Yep.
So obviously if that passes on to your boys and they grow up and they're happy and, like you said, they do this.
Yep.
If they become prime minister and they're happy with, happy being a prime minister, awesome.
Yep. Yep.
If they become a local footy coach, such as us, and they're happy with that...
Yep,
then awesome. That
wins.
You know.
Yep, that's a winner. And look, work-life balance, I reckon, is super important, and that's something I think that people with mental health issues are starting to acknowledge more and more.
Yes,
play such a big part. There's a lot of people out there that live to work, and I reckon that can be a bit destructive sometimes. It works for them, so great. For me, I work to live, and work in terms of order of priority for me is not really up the pointy end. I'm lucky. I really, really, really like what I do.
Yep.
I love my team. I love being around little kids all day and seeing them, really happy and giving out high fives and getting to know the families and building those connections.
Yep.
But it's not the be-all and end-all for me. I work so that I can provide for my family, and my family's the most important thing. And then I'm not sure where work fits in, to be honest. I think footy's up there somewhere, and friends. And
it sounds like you've got a good balance.
Absolutely. Work-life balance is awesome at the moment, and that's probably one of the greatest things about my job. I've got 50 team members who are alongside me, and... really lucky that they're an amazing team, and we've got an amazing culture and within our centre, so it makes it very easy to go to work. But if it wasn't the case, then I wouldn't have any hesitation in looking around for another job that would make me happier. Yep.
I know and I've done it in the past, and where you just... Or even if you have a bigger week at work, just because, you've helped out. And always when I'm at work, if I can help out, if staff members are away and you do a few extra hours and, I'm happy to do that. It's not, obviously, it's not a permanent weekly thing. It's just same against part of the environment that I work in, that, people help each other out. Someone's sick. Yeah, cool. I had a week off when I sort of had a relapse a few months ago.
Yep.
And I had some people, do a few extra things to help me out.
Yep.
But I know if I do that for too long and I don't get that family time in, it does, it affects me. I don't have that balance. It's just like if you're not getting enough sleep, it affects us.
Yep.
So that's same again. I'm sort of that same path. It's trying to find that balance as well.
You got to do what makes you happy, mate.
Yeah, 100%. I love my footy. But even then, sometimes if it's been a real long week at work and you've had footy as well come the end of the week, you don't have as much family time.
Yep.
It's like, you feel it. I feel it. Yep. But I love
my
footy.
And you get the guilt as well, don't you?
A little bit sometimes. I'm doing this, but it's
poor Shazzy stuck at home with Asher and Emmy.
She normally goes out.
Yeah, so true.
She, she'll go out. And
she's still stuck with them, though.
She is stuck with them. She's stuck. She's stuck with me, though.
Yeah, well, that's even worse, isn't it?
As well. So, but it is. It's balance. It's balance. And like you said, we're on. And I heard Schwatter say it last night when it obviously got replayed on social media that he's been on a 26-year mental health journey.
Yep.
You're on a you've been on a 13-year mental health journey.
Yep.
I've been on a 5 or 6 year mental health journey.
Yeah.
And part of that journey is obviously self-care, family time, you know, doing things we enjoy.
Yep.
Work-life balance, you know, everyone's different.
Yep.
You know, exercise, nutrition, like it's just a balance of everything.
Yep.
As well. And I think that's one thing that we need to remember.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
We're on a journey.
Yep.
We're on this journey.
Yeah, I think I heard Wayne Schwartz talk about how, you know, he said something about being cured, and you know, it's not that he's cured. He'll never be cured. It's something he's always going to deal with. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't necessarily want to be cured because
he was talking about broken. He's not broken.
Broken.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be fixed because we're not broken.
That's right.
Yep. We're on a journey.
Yep.
You know, which
absolutely.
And that's part of that, the terminology that, you know, and that stigmatism that and especially in males, you know. Alpha male, we're fucking tough.
Yeah, you know.
We can't show weakness. And I've said it before that all that's fucking shit.
Yep.
And I had that, like I had that mentality as well because that's what was all around me in society. And like you mentioned, it's changing. 5, 6 years ago, two blokes wouldn't mean sitting in a room talking about mental health. Where now it is more common.
Yep.
Still a lot of work to do.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Still a lot of work to do. But slowly those sort of walls are being broken down.
Yeah, and you know what? I'd love to see what the environment with mental health is like in 5 years' time. We speak about what it was like 5 years ago. Well, what does it look like in 5 years' time? You know, is there a mental health professional in every school? Is there is mental health a part of the curriculum?
I think it will. I think it will be.
How many? You know, we know the numbers are pretty drastic for men who are taking their lives at the moment, and what does that number look like in 5 years? Is it worse? Is it better? You know, they're the unknowns, but I think with the more openness and the more opportunities people have to share their stories through podcasts like as the Mental Health Connection, hashtag Mental Health Connection, you know, the better place we're going to be.
100%. I think definitely it will be in schools. Or there'll be a, you know, there'll be a portion of it in schools, learning about it, especially with the kids growing up. You know, it's just awareness.
Yeah.
The kids are aware of their – and it's not necessarily about mental illness or mental health conditions. It's just about looking after their mental health in general.
Spot on, yep.
So it's about that.
Yep.
It's, it doesn't have to be directly talking about anxiety, depression. But it's, okay, this is how we look after our mental health when we feel good, when we don't feel good, you know. All the different emotions. And the good thing is, you know, as men, from a young age, it's like sort of all the emotions, and it was just part of society that it's knocked out of us. So,
yeah.
You know, oh, you can't cry. That's what men don't cry.
Yeah. What are you, a girl?
Boys don't cry. Yeah. You're a girl.
Yeah.
You know, all that type of stuff. We've got to man up and harden up and suck it up and things like that. And So we don't express it.
Correct.
Where now, you know, education in schools that all kids are going to learn, hey, I can express my emotions.
Yep.
If I'm upset, I'm upset.
Yep.
I'm human. That's how we're designed. We're designed to express all those different emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So I can definitely say it's already happening. There's a lot of organisations that do stuff in schools, and it's getting bigger and bigger.
Yep.
But like, I think it's going to be a regular thing that's part of the curriculum.
Yeah. And I don't think it has to be. And it's funny, I actually saw, I cannot remember where I saw it, but it was on Facebook today, and someone I know or a business I know were doing a mental health first aid course.
Yep.
So it wasn't a traditional first aid course.
Yep.
It was a first aid course that just related to mental health, which I thought was amazing. And I meant to tag you in it, but I got sidetracked. So
yeah, there's a couple of them. You can do a mental health one and you can do a youth.
How good's that?
As well. Yeah. Mental health first aid. Which is awesome.
So, yeah, it's fantastic. And I'd love to do that for my workplace. So
there's a lot of workplaces now that are getting, like, they get one, you know, or a couple of people in their workplace place trained up on it.
Yep.
It's not a mandatory requirement, but it's awesome by those organizations that they're like, okay, we're going to invest, train a couple of staff members to do it on top of a couple of the workplaces I've worked at. When I worked for the YMCA, we actually got so I actually put in a tender to get some funding to do that for some of our staff. And nice. I think we ended up getting, I think we got 6 or 8 staff members trained up.
Oh, well done.
Yeah, so we had this is going back about 4 years ago.
Yep.
4 or 5 years ago. And we had 3 that were trained up in just mental health first aid, and then 3 in the youth. That's because awesome. We had a youth department as well.
Yeah.
So it was really good. So we had people that were
yep.
mental health first aid trained.
That's brilliant.
And it is. It's more, there's more organizations doing it, which is awesome.
Yeah. I'd never heard of it. So yeah, I loved it when I saw it.
Yeah, I think one day it'll be it'll probably be mandatory.
It'll be part of the normal first aid course.
Exactly, yeah. They'll have and I think they should. They should bring in a section of it.
Yep.
Pop it in there. So there is a bit more.
Yeah.
But it's like anything. Change takes time.
Yep.
We're slowly making
change. Rome wasn't built in a day, Tristan.
Rome wasn't. Either was this beautiful physique that I have. but my dad jokes are pretty good.
Yeah, no, they're not. That's the one thing I don't miss about working with you. In the coaching realm, mate. Because you're not the greatest.
No. I did have a question I didn't ask before. So digressing back to when you sought help,
mm-hmm.
did you find it hard to seek help?
You
said you couldn't remember whether you accepted.
Yep.
But in terms of that initial help, or even when you spoke to your family about it, did you find that hard?
Yeah, I reckon I did. Yeah, I reckon I did. And it wasn't something that I was happy to talk about.
Yep.
In 2006, when I was having my meds, if I had to have my meds around a mate, I probably wouldn't have them openly.
Yep.
I wouldn't, if someone asked me what they were for, I probably wouldn't tell them. Whereas now, I've got my, I think it's, what's it called? It's like Prozac, but it's not. So it's 20 mil of Prozac type stuff that I'm supposed to have every day, which I don't, but I know I can get by with having it every second day.
Yep.
Which probably suggests I should be on 10 mil, but anyway. So no, I don't think I was happy to discuss it back then. And it was probably a result of the lack of awareness, I reckon. The lack of awareness that I had of mental health, and the lack of awareness that the general public had of mental health, because it was certainly, 13 years ago, it wasn't anywhere near as well understood and well accepted as what it is now. It was, now we know that anxiety and depression are an illness, just like any other illness. Whereas 13 years ago, and you mentioned 26 years ago with Wayne Schwoss, well, it was a weakness.
Yeah.
So, and it's funny now that I've said that, I do remember thinking, I always used to pride myself on being mentally tough. Well, if I've got anxiety, maybe I'm not so mentally tough.
Mm. I had the same thought, and that's why I didn't ask it earlier, but asked it now, because if people are thinking the same, if they're thinking that right now, that just obviously the message is it's not a sign of weakness.
No, absolutely
not. It's showing courage that you're speaking up and seeking help and saying to whether it's a mate, whether it's a family member, obviously, or your GP, some sort of clinician that I'm struggling.
I need help.
I'm struggling. I need some help. What do I need to do?
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. And that takes, as you say, that's as brave and as courageous as anything you can do when you are battling. If you've got chicken pox, you don't just sit at home and fight it by yourself. So, if you're suffering with your mental health, then don't do that either.
Mm. No, definitely some big messages in there.
Mm.
When, just sort of start wrapping up, in terms of when the boys grow up, would you be sort of educating them or talking to them about obviously what you've gone through and...
Yeah, yeah, I'd be more than... Yeah, I won't be shy in talking about it. They'll no doubt notice me taking those tablets. I suppose once they start noticing, I'll probably be on a lot of different tablets because we're both getting old, Tristan. Mm. So I'll be open and honest and tell them that, you know, it helps daddy or it helps dad, depending how old they are.
Yep.
It helps keep dad balanced. And as they get older, I'll answer as many questions as they've got and be as honest as I need to be. Obviously, you still want to protect them to a certain extent. So if there were any, for me, there's no nitty gritty details as such. But no, I'm happy to be honest as I need to be, and you know, hopefully it'll help them maintain a well balanced mental health outlook.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, what about yourself?
Oh yeah, definitely. I've thought about how, like, yeah, exactly what I would sort of talk about.
And, yep.
Emmy knows that obviously I go through some stuff.
Yep.
So she doesn't know all the details, so she's too young to understand, she knows that, you know, obviously sometimes if I'm not having a good day,
yep,
obviously it's not because I have a broken leg or anything like that, like something visibly you can see.
Yep.
So she's sort of she's asked before, especially when I was going through a really bad time and I'm just in bed and
yep,
just laid up in bed and, you know, obviously we explain a bit to her, but she's not at that age yet where I think she can fully comprehend that.
No.
But it's being open. So as she's growing up, same again, she's aware of things and, it's like we talk about that in schools, just being aware of your mental health as well. And we're very big on her expressing her feelings. So if she is upset about something, let us know why you're upset, or if you're happy about something, why are you happy? You know, so sharing all those emotions, and that'll just obviously roll on with Asher, and same deal. You know, obviously he's a boy. It's not going to be, oh, you can't cry, you can't do this, you can't do that. Hey, if you're upset, you be upset. You know, let us know why you're upset.
Yeah,
express those emotions.
Yep.
So we're definitely going to be.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah. And I've actually, so we sort of work on gratitude a little bit now as well. So every night, whether it's Zara or myself putting Lenny to bed, who's nearly five now, it's we go through read two books, we sing two songs, we go out of the room, and then we come back in to check on him pretty much straight away. And we always ask him, what was your happiest part of the day? And that gives him the opportunity to give a bit of self-reflection, and I suppose it's a way of practicing gratitude for him at a young age. He always asks, what did we do? What was your happiest part of the day? What did we do again? So we tell him what we did, and he'll always come up with a couple of things. So yesterday, Zara took him and Billy to the zoo. So, and then they went around to his friend Tex's place from kinder. So I went through everything he did. What was your happiest part? Went through everything he did. And he said, oh, being at the zoo and going to Tex's.
Yep.
So straight away, he's got two things that he really enjoyed. And I reckon it helps us know what he likes too. Like, we obviously know, but if he's telling us at bedtime that, oh, this was my happiest and favourite part of the day, then righto, we'll try and do that a bit more often.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, we've done that too.
Yeah.
What's the happiest part of your day?
Yeah.
We've also done what's the saddest part of your day
as
well. And,
and
you know, oh, I didn't like it when, you know, I fell over. Oh, that's okay. And how's your leg feeling now? Yeah, it's feeling a bit better. Yeah. That's good, you know. So it's, you know, they're expressing that emotion as well. But it's awesome, you know, that adults do it now. I've done it. I don't know if you've done any of it, but
gratitude journals.
Yeah, things like that.
No, I haven't. I've always meant to.
Even just that reflection in your head.
Yep.
And we train people, you know, we say, tell people to do it, it just in general. Like,
yep.
I know when I, like, backtracking, when I got married, the day just flew by.
Yep.
You know, and anyone who's got married, and if they ask me anything, I always say just try and just take a breath, take a few minutes to yourself, and just sort of, you know, reflect and you know, appreciate, obviously, you know,
watch all the people you love having fun,
you know, and that's, and, you know, we're teaching that for anything, that it's that gratitude.
Yep.
So I've definitely done it. There's different ways that I've done it, where you've done journaling. Sometimes you're showing gratitude to someone by shooting a text message, hey, you know, thanks for your help today, you know, at work I was under the pump, and you know, you helped me out a lot, really appreciate it, things like that.
So it's something that we all can be better at, because you like saying thanks is easy, but actually showing how grateful you are.
Mm.
And it's something that, again, going back to my job, it's something that I'm trying to do better. because, you know, with a swimming school, we need a lot of covers, and, you know, it's easy to ask them to do it, and then when they say yes, say thanks, but, you know, following up with another text saying, oh, thanks again. And so my assistant manager today and Tuesday did a power load of work, because on Tuesday I was away crook, and then today I was in at a meeting in St Kilda, and he had to do some stuff that he normally wouldn't do, and so just sending him a text and saying, you know, well done. I call him Skipper, so I'm the coach, he's the captain at work.
Yep.
You know, well done, Skipper. So, you know, just those little things, because it goes a long, long way. A long, long way when you can show gratitude to other people. And then, you know, it gives them something to be grateful for.
It's just part of that leadership as well.
Yeah, yeah. You
know? And it opens that channel, hey.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Mm. That's awesome. Well, I think we've covered a lot there.
Yeah, thank you.
Just sort of,
what was the time?
Fully wrapping up.
Wrap it up like a tight nugget.
Yes. To if anyone is going through anything, male, female, you know, definitely reach out. Don't be ashamed of what's, you know, what you're going through. It's not a sign of weakness, you know, just going to see your GP, calling up obviously any of the health lines, you know, getting the help that people deserve, really. And just reaching out, you know, tap into your support network. I tap into mine quite regularly.
Yep.
I'm sure you tap into yours as well, you know, and it can be a few people, it can be 10 people.
Yep.
Can be professionals, can be mates, whatever it is. So definitely reach out. But
and I reckon if the flip side to that too, if you do notice someone's maybe battling a little bit or hasn't seen themselves, don't, you know, make sure you do ask him, because even if it's just a lot of the time, if people ask me a long time ago if everything all right, I probably wouldn't say anything to their face, but if they ask me in a text message, I'd probably be more likely to tell them. And I reckon that's a lot of people these days. So it can be as simple as a text message. Hey, mate, you're doing okay. Just noticed you were a bit quiet tonight.
Yeah, anything like that. Those different forms. No. Sometimes people don't say it straight away either. Yep. So you shoot them a text and they write back, yeah, I'm cool. And then a few days later you notice they're still the same, and they're not themselves, and you shoot them another text. And sometimes it takes a couple of times and they go, oh, yeah. Yeah, I have been struggling for a few days, and you know, it just, same again, it opens up that avenue.
So, and look, even with my job, I've got, as I said before, I've got about 50 team members, and we've got a lot of people. Well, not a lot. I shouldn't say a lot. We've got several who have their own mental health issues. Yep. So,
well, if you got 50, the number's about 1 in 4.
Correct. So we're gonna have a lot.
So you look, at that, like, you just do those numbers.
Correct. Yeah. So, and you know, I'm happy to, more than happy to discuss how they're going, and you know, I've got quite a few who regularly we have a chat about our own mental health. You know, I'll talk about mine, and they'll tell me about how they're going, and it's almost like a, even though there's I work mostly with females, it's almost like a brotherhood, for lack of a better word.
Yep.
That, you know, we've got our own scars from fighting the same battle, and we can relate and bond over that, and really have that, you know, open and honest conversation, and I think part of it heals each other as well. Don't be afraid to talk, Simo.
I'll never stop talking.
No, I know. Jesus.
And just, obviously, we've just had to finish up. We have had Are You Okay Day. Obviously, that was last week.
Yep.
But always remember that any day is Are You Okay Day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Doesn't matter.
Yep.
Obviously, there's one day to just help remind everyone about it. But any day is Are You Okay Day. So anyone you see, definitely reach out.
Yep.
If it's yourself, reach out. But definitely enjoyed this chat, Jared.
Yes, me too, Simo. And, pleasure.
Appreciate the being open and honest. And thanks for everyone tuning in and listening.
Thanks for having me, Simo.
No worries. We'll talk to you next time.
Cheers, bro.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.